This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Adam Hodgkin, who's in Italy at this point.
Hello, David.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Very, very well, but very warm.
And, well, we are very warm as well in the East Coast of the United States. Your business is called Exact Editions. And maybe before we talk about some of the issues that, you know, we thought we could cover in this conversation, you could talk a little bit about your background, how you came to publishing, what you've done in the past, and maybe a little bit about what Exact Editions does.
Sure, David. Very happy to do that and very happy to be chatting with you. Yes, if I start with me, which is, I'm sort of go back a bit. I'm sort of holdover from when book publishing didn't know any new technology at all. I arrived at Oxford University Press as my first real job as a philosophy editor, and there really weren't any computers involved in the business at all, except for handling the warehouse, I guess, and that was a Burroughs mainframe. So I sort of antedate technology in publishing, but perhaps because I was a young editor, I tended to be thrown into doing technology fairly early on. After a year or two, they used to say, well, the philosophy editor better figure out that what to do with word processor disks or whatever. So quite early on, I began to move into a trajectory where I was more involved with software and databases and so on. And this is well before the web, well before... even before Windows. I remember when the first computers we had were Macs, really, and Apple IIs. So I've grown, really, I've always been involved in working in a business which is kind of partly publishing and partly software or the web after 1995. And I've done three startups. The most recent was, 5 years ago with two colleagues, with whom I'd worked at a previous startup, which was XRefer, that was aggregating reference books. And the two founders, and the three founders, as we now are with Exact Editions, kind of got to know each other in that previous business with XRefer aggregating textbooks. And we decided to look at initially the magazines business. And we evolved, while we were planning the business, we took a view, really, about how publishing would work, which was different from what we'd done with XRefer. XRefer is now a company called Credo Reference. We took quite a different view in that we thought that with magazines, the key thing would be to capture the look and the quality of the presentation of a magazine. And we thought again about how that should be done through the web. We came up with a solution, which we didn't realize it, but it was very close to what Google were working on with their Google Book Search. At that point, that was under wraps. We had no idea about Google Book Search. But when it appeared a year and a half after we'd started Exact Editions, we realized that they were using a very similar database model, similar technology, really, for capturing books. So with my two colleagues and friends who founded Exact Editions, we've been beavering away at that, developing a view of digital publishing, which is in some ways quite similar to Google Book Search.
Right, but there's, I think what's interesting about Exact Editions is your conceptual basis is to replicate the magazine as it is in print form, in digital form, which is a different concept than, and you talk about that in one of your blogs, I noticed that the difference between, I thought this was actually pretty interesting, that book publishers have looked at digital publishing essentially as, I hate to say it this way, but as a digital analog. In other words, it's simply take the book and replicate it. And there's been a discussion about, you know, which is better, enhanced or straightforward conversion, but book publishers have gone pretty much with the idea that their readers will read digitally in similar ways that they read in print form. And magazines, mm-hmm. as you've pointed out, many magazines themselves feel that they're obligated by the nature of the digital landscape to enhance the experience of the reader, to take advantage of the linkages, to make it socially media friendly. And mm-hmm. Exact Editions, actually, by the name you've chosen, really you have chosen to exactly replicate the reading experience, but simply transformed that into a digital environment.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's fair. I think another thing that I notice, and we do look and try to understand what's happening with both newspapers, magazines, and books, and I would say that it is quite extraordinary the way those industries are, although they face probably the same technology wave, they are actually reacting in very different ways. I mean, the newspapers feel like they're falling off a cliff, and they are to some extent. The book publishers are quietly confident that somehow e-books or digital books will work, and I think they're right. And the magazine publishers are a bit confused, really. So many of them think that actually they're going to do a new business, which is not really recognizably the same business they've been doing before. And I think that's a big mistake. I think they'll be presenting magazines. I think that's what the iPad has actually shown magazine publishers very effectively, that the magazine as a digital form works.
Talk a little bit about the business end of the magazine publishing world has always fascinated me. I'm not, my background is mostly in books, but I've had some contact with magazines over the years, and clearly their model has been, at least for most magazines, other than say Serious Scholarly or other content-heavy magazines that have been able to charge a high subscription to cover their costs. Most magazines really use subscriptions and newsstand as eyeball acquisition in order mm-hmm. to sell ads. Mm-hmm. And in the digital environment, I think that's different. I'm not mm-hmm. sure that it works the same way.
But I think that's right. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I would also stress that there's a difference to some extent. The American magazine market is more extreme in its reliance on advertising, if you like, and not on subscription income than, say, the British, which is kind of halfway, or many continental magazine businesses, which are probably much more dependent on subscription income. I mean, it does vary from country to country, the extent to which advertising forms the major part of, but I think for many magazines, it's the most profitable part. So the threat to advertising is very, very sort of apparent and worrying to big magazine businesses.
Right, and I would think that in some ways, the cost of distribution of the physical object varies also. You know, the United States is a massive country, so the cost of having a magazine on newsstands nationwide on more or less the same day or the same week is actually quite high, and it ends up being
a
significant,
very high.
Right, and so what happened? That's why newsstand was really a circulation builder. I think for a lot of magazines, they probably could lose money on newsstand and not really mind as long as the circulation was strong. But in countries where the cost of physical distribution is much lower, it would make sense to me that they would be more profitable on the sale of the object.
Yes. But there's also, it goes with that, is the extraordinary wastefulness of the magazine distribution system via newsstand, where maybe it's worth a while for a magazine publisher to carry on increasing the circulate or the distribution to the point that over 50% of magazines are actually destroyed and don't reach consumers. Shocking.
Right, it's a horribly inefficient mechanism, and actually the promise of digital there, I would think, has multiple or manifold benefits. One is that wastefulness is actually, while it may be economically viable as long as your subscription base or your circulation is increasing, when your circulation declines, then it becomes extremely problematical. But it's also in a universe of shrinking natural resources, increased, you know, the issue of carbon in the atmosphere, you know, you could build an argument that digital distribution is in fact more efficient and profitable for a publisher because it dispenses with all of that waste. Similar to book business where you have returns, and you could argue that digital, you know, it isn't really, you know, people have talked about the different cost structure of digital versus print, and publishers are very clear that there are still embedded costs in digital that must be accounted for, but the cost of returns and of accounting for and dealing with unsold copies, at least for magazines, seems to me quite high, and offers then a pathway for the digital publishing to be potentially to create a different business model.
Yeah, and it's very interestingly mixed problem, because I think magazine publishers quite often mistake, they fail to appreciate that actually the advertisements, the wonderful advertisements that they sometimes have, say in fashion magazines, are actually a very large part of the pleasure of the magazine. And not just fashion magazines, many special interest magazines. The ads are actually very interesting to the audience. And that's, of course, why they're effective. So, you know, when we came along, we used to find many magazine publishers would kind of assume that the digital version should exclude the ads. And we just felt that's wrong. And it's against our tenet that the magazine should be, a digital magazine should be, in some sense, exactly.
And
like a print magazine.
Do you offer in the exact editions model the benefit of being able to click on the ad and have a direct connection to the, perhaps a landing page or a way for the publisher then to keep track of visitors and know how many people clicked on an ad, which is obviously very valuable?
Absolutely, yes, we do. I mean, I've just, as it happens, been looking at an issue we do publish as weekly as an iPad app. And in there are 440 ISBNs in one issue, 62 phone numbers. Those will mostly be in ads, so there will be interactive elements in the digital ad now, which we improve or enhance the PDF before we work with it, so that there is a lot more linkage in the PDF. And that is actually valuable both to the advertisers but also to the consumers, the people reading the magazine, because they've got an immediate, if they're reading it on an iPhone, they can call the phone number if they're interested. So when I say a magazine digitally should be exactly as it is in print, of course it is, in some senses, quite clearly better. It's more than just the print magazine, because it's obviously completely searchable. It should be something that can be linked to very easily and so on. So there are exact editions. Is at the very least, the magazine should be as good as the print magazine, but one would hope that it would be in many ways actually quite a lot better.
Right, and you mentioned the iPad. I think in many ways I've looked at magazines on the iPad. You know, and I find the iPad I love the iPad, but it is not indispensable to me as I had hoped it would become. But I find that there are the richness of the visuals in the iPad is really a very powerful driver to use it. I think works for magazines really well, or especially illustrated magazines. I think for pure text magazines, it's obviously not as critical. But, you know, just the visual experience of reading on the or consuming information and looking at art on the iPad is pretty powerful. You've mentioned, I think, in print, but also you alluded to it earlier, that the iPad has become a very important factor for you. And I think you said somewhere that you were surprised at how rapidly the iPad increased uptake, I assume, of exact editions over the iPhone. That's probably because of the size of the screen and ease of reading, I assume?
I think it must be that. And I mean, I've been an iPhone user for nearly 2 years, I guess, now. And I've always enjoyed reading on the iPhone, but I think it is a slight minority taste. My sense is that maybe 20% of iPhone users like to do some sort of serious reading on their phone. And maybe, you know, by serious reading, I mean like reading 3 or 4 pages or print or whatever, or maybe 10 pages of print, but not much more than that. And lots of people don't really want to read more than a sentence or two on their iPhone. So, but the iPad certainly does transform that, and people are much, much more willing to read in a deep way on an iPad, I think. And that's, I suspect, why some of our magazines are sort of quite heavy or quite sort of serious, like Opera. Opera is for opera enthusiasts. It's not an academic magazine, but it's certainly for people who are quite committed to opera. So people who are buying the Opera iPad are, you know, they're going to give it some serious attention, I think, on the iPad. And I think people find it much easier. One thing about judging magazines on the iPad at this stage, I think one has to be aware that really it's terribly early days yet. We had to produce, and anybody who got an app out for the iPad had to do it, you know, with almost like wearing a blindfold. You had a simulator to produce the app, but until the iPad was in your hands, it was a lot of guesswork getting the software right. And I think there's going to be, you know, huge advances in the next 6 months in what the iPad software platform can do for magazines or books.
Yeah, and I've noticed that.
You're going to see a lot of advances.
Right, many of the apps that were set up for iPhone and converted to iPad were early on quite kludgy and not necessarily ideal, but as people have spent more time and energy improving them and taking advantage of the platform, I agree with you. I think it's early days just in general terms, in terms of digital reading. I think we're so early in the kind of arc of change that it's really kind of wonderful in a lot of ways to imagine all of the possibilities that exist. Now I also know that you've worked on or working toward converting illustrated books for your platform, which makes perfect sense. I think that you know, a highly illustrated book works as well as a highly illustrated magazine on the iPad, and is really not so appealing on an iPhone. In my personal experience, that, you know, it's just, I actually like reading text on the iPhone. I love the Stanza app, and I've, you know, I use the Kindle for iPhone app, and I think they work really well. But reading a more richly, let's say, illustrated book, I think would be very difficult just because of the screen size. And a Kindle or a Nook, because they're black and white, obviously cannot lend themselves to the conversion of an illustrated book. So do you see that as an area for you? I mean, I assume for your business it's an area of growth, but it also has its different challenges and other opportunities as well.
I think there are some very interesting opportunities and challenges here. One would be, sorry, am I hearing you in the background there, David? Or
no, that's just probably Skype noise.
Yeah, Skype noise, okay. One of the interesting challenges is, I think, again, I don't want to sound like I'm an Apple fanboy, though I, to some extent, I am. But what a fantastic showcase the iPad is for illustrated books. And I think this is something which gives, you know, it costs money to produce a really nice illustrated book because of color printing, and it's probably going to be printed on good quality paper and well-designed and so on. I mean, it is not straightforward to make a really beautiful printed illustrated book, and people know how to do it, so that, you know, there are plenty being produced. And I think the opportunity, really, to promote such quality books that have a very rich visual experience through the iPad is almost, perhaps for the next couple of years, can be almost as important as actually selling. I think it'll be very interesting to be selling iPad apps, and I think I've blogged about how I suspect some sorts of art publishing, we're going to see even more of a kind of march up market. So already many art publishers are aiming more at a kind of collector market. But I think it would be an interesting opportunity to, at the same time, reach a popular market with the the app version, whether it's Android or the iPad, the affordable, fantastic catalog of a exhibition of MoMA or whatever, as well as the $30 or $40 work of art.
There you sort of touch on something that I've thought about for a long time, and that is that the inefficiencies of printing or publishing art books or catalogs for museum exhibits, they become very expensive. You know, you have a sort of reduction in the size of the market, and in printing, obviously, because it's a scale based economics, the fewer you print, the higher your costs go, plus the idea that illustrated book publishers are forced by economics to print in places like China, Singapore, Korea, offshore mm-hmm. from the country where the books are sold, creates delays in delivery. You know, it takes 12 to 14 weeks for shipping by sea. You print 5,000 copies because you don't know the size of the market. If it does really well, you can't reprint fast enough. I mean, there are a lot of mm-hmm. really powerful business drivers in illustrated books toward, I would think, from the publisher side as much as from the consumer side to explore new business models in digital publishing. And where here is where the inefficiencies of print maybe are exposed even more, because the cost of making a mistake with an illustrated book is so high. Now, of course, then this kind of leads into another couple of questions that I wanted to cover, and that is, you've written about sampling and as a tool that you sort of offer the consumer the opportunity to view for free part of the book. And this is something I think is really important, because the kind of equivalent in the print world is you go into a bookstore and you can browse. Online, we don't really have yet all of the browsability tools that I think will evolve. And is this an area that you're working on with Exact Editions? I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah. Well, and our business model for the iPad is definitely to offer free samples. We have what we call a freemium approach. So you download the app for free. And that might have, it's up to the publisher to decide how much content should be free. And book and magazine publishers tend to, in my view, are a bit on the cautious side, because I think it would be interesting to see what happens when people do some serious experiments. And Amazon should know quite a lot about this, because they do a lot of sampling, of course, with their look inside. Google haven't yet started selling, so you can't tell how effective their book search is at actually selling digital editions. But there will soon be a lot of evidence to, what is the right proportion of a book to make freely available to sample, as though it was on the book stack, in Barnes & Noble, where people can leaf through it. Look, I mean, that analogy is going to work very well for digital books. It'd be much easier to sample, and the publishers will, I think, naturally want to ration the amount of sampling that's done to an appropriate level. I think it'll make a great buying experience.
Right, it may be very different for different kinds of content as well. And clearly, the more expensive the app, probably the more necessary it is to provide a free sample and a certain amount of free exploration, kind of test drive the app before you buy it. Because if you're asking me, I mean, I don't know what the pricing will be, but if I think it was the book The Elements that I was really impressed with, I think they charged $12.99. You don't just make a $12.99 purchase of an e-object without having a chance to really explore it, unless someone writes such a glowing review that you just have to go there and buy it, and you trust whoever wrote about it, which actually...
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And actually, I don't know, we haven't done much with fiction books yet, but you could give away an awful lot of a Stieg Larsson book, and still people want to buy the rest of it.
Sure, because it's not satisfying to just read one chapter. When the Kindle came out, the most powerful feature, aside from the ability to click one button and download a book instantaneously, which I thought was really cool. The ability to sample maybe 40 or 50 pages of a book was very powerful for me, because really, I hear this from people who are desultory readers. People who don't read all the time feel very jealous of their time. And, I mean, I guess people who read all the time feel the same way, that, you know, if I'm going to invest my time, I really want to make sure I'm going to like this book. Now, there's no guarantee, you can't be sure you'll ever be fully satisfied until you read it, but the sampling helps the consumer, whose time is really the most valuable commodity. That's what we're all competing for, is the time of the reader. And if you give them a chance to really experience the environment and read and get a sense of what your book is, then I think, you know, not everyone will buy it because they don't all like it, but I think it increases the chances that you get real buyers.
Yeah, and going back to the iPad, I mean, the thing is that people who buy an iPad, what is it, $400 or more, they are probably going to buy books. And they look so good. I mean, as you asked me earlier, and we were astonished that although when we first looked at this after about a month after it had been released, and there were still then only 1 million iPads out there in the wild, we were finding with plenty of our magazines that we were selling more on the iPad than on the iPhone, where there were 80 million iTunes users already. So I think, the iPad is really for book and magazine publishers. It is, as they increasingly are realizing, it is a great opportunity to claim a new sales market.
And just, I guess, another question, before we run out of time. Have you had any conversations with authors or publishers about the kind of experimentation element of a writer and an editor, say, looking at the platform and trying to create a book utilizing the tools fully? In other words, you know, we have 500 years of embedded history in print and much less embedded history in digital. So it's unlikely that every writer and every editor is going to feel like they know what to do with the full environment of the digital platform. But it would seem interesting anyway, and it would seem likely that some writers will say, this provides a tremendous opportunity for me to do this idea I have, to write this book, and do it more fully than I had been able to do it before, almost the way, you know, Neil Gaiman has worked in graphic novels, and, you know, where you can have collaboration of an artist and a writer. It is a different medium. I recognize there are some writers who feel that that's almost sacrilegious, but I think the platform creates or engenders creativity and opens doors for writers and publishers to go through that were not available in any other way.
Absolutely. And even, again, with illustrated books, it's so strong there, too. We've been having discussions with, publishers who've got, high quality books on food or on typography, and the authors or the editors immediately want to can see ways in which you can deliver significant additional value through the app by integrating either sort of bonus media images or whatever, or links, or indeed reciprocal propositions for typography games or something. There are all kinds of possibilities out there, and there's going to be a lot of invention as the publishers get hold of it.
So, but in your platform, are there tools available to the publisher and author, or do they have to then essentially collaborate with you? Because you are the one who runs the platform, obviously, and has control over what happens, does it then become a collaboration between author, publisher, and Exact Editions, where the platform really, you have to do the things or collaborate with them to help them make the best use of the platform?
Well, we have no expertise in photography or video, really, to speak of, so our platform would just enable. We call it bonus media to appear And we've got some, we'll be showing some ways in which that can work for a magazine or for a book, so that there's additional resource there available if the project requires it.
Right, but it's done by the publisher, not necessarily by you then.
Or the author. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to do the video, you know, interviews that might be accompany a book on cheese or, you know, do the very interesting typographical illustrations that might go with a typography book. That's what the author or the designer of the book will do.
Right. No, I think it's a tremendous opportunity. It's kind of, you know, it has my mind swirling about with possibilities. So, I think that you're in a good place. I think you're in a, you have an opportunity to really create some very powerful new reading experiences.
I would agree with you, David, but I would just say that in a sense we want to enable it. We're not going to do it. So that's answering your question again. I think this is a great tool for authors, designers, and they may involve also bringing in the skills of film. But I talking to magazine publishers, the idea of film, they're not going to become like TV companies. The role of video clips, magazines, digital magazines in the future is going to be a bit different, I think. It's not going to be a TV program.
Right. No,
it'll be a clever ad.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think also consumers, if you blur the boundary between all of the media such that everything becomes video, I think it actually diminishes the value that the print medium still has, and which people appreciate. They don't always want moving pictures. I think there's still room for more quiet consumption of ideas, which can only happen, I think, in print.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Adam, it's been a pleasure talking to you. This has been Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Adam Hodgkin, whose business is Exact Editions, exacteditions.com. And it's been great talking to you.
Thank you, David.